Welcome to Case in Point, produced by the University of Pennsylvania Carey Law School. My name is Matt Marin, and I'm the Multimedia Coordinator from the Communications Department. Today, I'm joined by Carey Colonnesi, the Edward B. Shills Professor of Law and Professor of Political Science. He is the Director of the Penn Program on Regulation and the Regulatory Review Faculty Advisor. Also on the show is Larissa Morgan, JD Class of 2021. She's the Editor-in-Chief of the Regulatory Review. Thanks for joining us. Carey, do you want to first start out by maybe speaking a little bit about what the Regulatory Review is?
Yeah, happy to. I mean, one of my favorite topics, my students produced the Regulatory Review, which is the leading online publication related to all things regulatory. We have about 25 to 30 students overall involved in the regulatory review over the course of the year, and they're publishing new content every Monday through Saturday, covering the full gamut of substantive areas of regulation, from financial regulation to telecommunications and technology to healthcare to environmental regulation, plus a range of cross-cutting issues about regulatory process, administrative law, benefit cost analysis, and so forth. And of course, you know, as of late, we are also dealing with the regulatory dimensions of the COVID-19 crisis. But it's a wonderful, wonderful public service that the students provide. The students here at the University of Pennsylvania Law School are providing on a regular basis new content about sometimes issues that don't get enough attention in the mainstream press, and that probably, quite frankly, most members of the public are not as fully aware of. And we know from our analytics data, we're reaching a incredibly wide audience through this. And in the process, the students are gaining tremendous skills that they are going to use throughout their legal careers. We work very hard on writing, making sure that these dense, complex policy issues are clear to the broad public, that the writing is engaging while still being precise and accurate. Those are important professional skills. And of course, the students are learning a tremendous amount about cutting edge issues of regulation at the same time. So all in all, it's a pedagogical tool, it's a public service, and we've got a tremendous track record over the last 10 years of putting out this publication that is read in now over 185 different countries from around the world.
Great, thank you. And Larissa, would you perhaps want to talk a little bit about your experience as a student and being involved with the Regulatory Review?
Absolutely. So I joined the Regulatory Review as an associate editor during my 1L year as part of the outreach team, where I was responsible for soliciting contributions from outside scholars, policymakers, employees of different agencies, and various other professionals. It was really incredible. And then I joined the seminar as part of the Regulatory Review during my 2L year, where I really gained incredible writing experience. And at the same time, I was able to write about topics that I care a lot about, different policy issues that are important to me and my focus on healthcare law. So overall, it has been the highlight of my Penn Law career. And now in my role as editor-in-chief, I'm just so humbled and honored to be in this role and to be leading the organization and the Regulatory Review as a publication in my capacity, and to continue on our great legacy of producing great content for our readers. And I think, like what Professor Colonnesi had said, is that we take and we distill complex regulatory issues and analysis into thought-provoking, enriching stories for our readers. And I think our readers really appreciate that value add to issues of regulation.
I once had a colleague I was meeting with in Paris, and we were walking down the street to go to lunch. And she says to me that she finds that each of the essays in the Regulatory Review read like little stories. And we do try to make them clear and engaging. And I tell my students that that kind of writing is helpful in the professional world. You've got busy partners at law firms, clients, judges, and you need to be able to make your point well, clearly, engagingly right away. And that's what we try to do with the Regulatory Review.
Right on. Thank you. So It's no secret right now that we're in the middle of a pandemic. A little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but honestly, who knows? And you have a new series, or you've had an ongoing series, kind of covering certain issues in regards to regulation in the pandemic. And as I understand it, comparative between different countries as well.
Big picture is, so over the last couple of months, so many of the pieces that the staff writers, the students have been writing, and so many of the pieces that have been coming in from outside contributors, leading scholars and practitioners, have really focused on the COVID-19 crisis. It is as much as it is a public health crisis of the highest order, it's also a challenge for law and regulation. And in addition to, I think, or so far about 40 or so essays total, about 20 of those coming on various developments in FDA regulation, regulation of privacy, how the COVID-19 crisis is affecting education and communication. In addition to those sorts of topical issues, the students have put together with some leadership from our faculty involved as well, a special series on how nations around the world are responding to the COVID-19 crisis.
Our comparative series is called Comparing Nations Responses to COVID-19, and that's a series we had launched in April, which features leading scholars from more than 20 different countries who discuss the administrative law and regulatory dimensions of the global response to COVID-19. The series also features, in addition to focusing on particular countries, and we have right now every continent represented except Antarctica. In the series itself, we have essays about the World Health Organization and the European Union. So it's a really robust series, and it's unique from our other standalone essays.
Just to run down some of the countries, the lists of some of the countries that have been featured already in the United States, obviously, China, France, Italy, Israel, South Africa, UK, India, Canada, Germany, South Korea, the Netherlands. We have pieces coming up in the works on Mexico, Colombia, Brazil. We have some pieces on all of the OECD countries, European Union as well. This has really been a remarkable compilation of the legal dimensions of the response to the COVID-19 crisis. I really have to give full credit to Nason Mahoubi, one of our lecturers in law and a key figure in our Center for China Studies here on campus at Penn. Nason really was the inspiration for the series and has been instrumental in recruiting many of the authors of the works that have been featured in this series. I think it's truly the only place that one could go today to get such a broad range of countries featured and what their legal systems are doing to respond to or how they've been adapted in response to the COVID-19 crisis. This is a global crisis, and the regulatory review has always had a global presence. As I said, our readership is around the world, and our coverage is global in its reach. And this particular series, I think, is quite fitting for what the regulatory review does. It's quite fitting, quite frankly, for what the University of Pennsylvania Law School is all about, because this COVID-19 crisis is a crisis that calls for scientific expertise and public health expertise, no doubt. It also is having tremendous economic ramifications, absolutely. But it's also posing tremendous challenges to the legal systems in every country around the world as well, creating new challenges, need to respond more quickly in different ways, a reconfiguration, at least on a temporary basis, and some worry might be on a permanent basis for some of the working out of the relationship between government and in business and individual liberty. So this is front and central. I think it's sort of the kind of project that fits very well with the University of Pennsylvania and our cross-disciplinary approach to law, where we can see how law is responding to and dealing with scientific and medical and public health crises and economic crises through the restructuring of the regulatory systems.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think in terms of what readers get out of this content, they're receiving knowledge about how law is at the center of all of the problems that Professor Colonnese is mentioning, whether it's working through public health related issues in a country or the economic suffering from this pandemic. This series is really so unique, and we're very lucky and grateful to Mason Mabubi for helping us put it together, and then also to, I should say, the executive editors of the Regulatory Review, Megan and Lucas, who has been leading this effort and in regular contact with the contributors who are featured in this series. So it's really been a team effort, and I think it's unique, and it's something that I hope readers will get a lot out of. I think most importantly, we're seeing, as you read throughout all these essays, how some countries have relaxed certain rules, such as testing protocols and rules that apply to government responses, and then other countries and even the same countries have placed heightened impositions and additional requirements on their citizens, such as quarantining and social distancing, things that really are so unprecedented that haven't been seen before. So I think this is really an interesting test of our legal systems around the world, as much as it is a global pandemic.
Yeah, I would also echo what Larissa said about it being a team effort. This is one of the largest, most ambitious series of all. Megan Downey and Lucas Siegman, who've been spearheading a lot of the editorial work behind this, is our hats go off to them for their great job. It's challenging because not all of the contributors have English as their primary language, but we run everything we do in this series and everything else through a multi-level editing, fact-checking process. It's a very careful, rigorous production. We don't accept everything. We're selective publication. And this particular series is really drawing on some of the leading experts on administrative law and regulation in each of the countries. There's a lot of commonalities, certainly, about what's happening in these different countries. You know, a lot of use of emergency law provisions, a lot of adaptation, a lot of what I call in one of my essays that's part of this series, obligation alleviation. There's at times a relaxation of laws or rules. So here in the U.S., for example, there's emergency use authorizations for new testing protocols or treatment techniques for COVID-19 disease. But there's also a lot of obligation imposition going on as well, as we are seeing here in the United States, but also around the world with quarantining and stay-at-home orders, with business bans and bans on public gatherings and the like too. And you know, there's the potential in situations like this for that kind of obligation imposition or obligation alleviation to be abused. And one of the vital roles that administrative law plays is to try to make sure that there's proper oversight when governments are relaxing or imposing obligations, and making sure that this is all in the public interest overall.
Great. And so there is a wide breadth of material. Are there any particular essays or reports you recommend as kind of a beginning place, kind of a natural jumping off point, or is that just at the beginning?
Oh, this is like asking my favorite child, right?
Not asking you to pick favorites, just asking you where to start. I guess that would be the beginning.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, we have a wonderful piece by a former visiting fellow from China who is writing, Sheng Kuai, who's one of the leading administrative law scholars, who's written about some of the early responses that have occurred in China following the outbreak there. One of the early countries to be hit hard was Italy. We have a piece by Maria De Benedetto, who's at the University in Rome, an administrative law scholar there, who's writes in her essay a lot about how this is a crisis of trust. That people are going to have to trust that the government is acting wisely. And then, of course, how do we create an administrative law apparatus and an oversight process to make sure that the public can maintain its trust in government? That's really important. You know what? Go ahead, Larissa.
Yeah, I think it really depends on what the reader is interested in. So, for example, if a reader wants to learn about a particular country's response to COVID-19, we have opportunities for a reader to do that. As Professor Colonizzi had said, we have coverage of China, France, Italy, Australia, various countries. But I would recommend starting perhaps with some of the larger, kind of more global pieces. So the piece about the World Health Organization, I think, is a great one. It's called Increasing the Legitimacy of the World Health Organization. It's by Oswald Janssen. And he talks about how international organizations need clear administrative principles to guide their public health emergency responses. So I think that's a good overall coverage of what's happening in terms of larger international organizations. I also think Professor Colonizzi's essay, which is actually the first essay listed in our series, is a great starting point because it provides some of the theoretical underpinnings of the regulatory responses to this crisis as well.
And the WHO, we're recording this podcast on a day when President Trump has issued some kind of ultimatum to stop funding the WHO. It's an easy scapegoat, these international organizations, and they have certainly some, as any organization or institution, some opportunities for improvement, undoubtedly. That's just to give you an idea of how timely these essays can be by giving readers a vital background into controversies and conflicts today around these international institutions, around the tensions between keeping businesses shut down or reopening them. There's also some really forward-thinking essays, like I'm reminded of one by Christy Ford, who's a Canadian corporate law scholar, primarily at the University of British Columbia, who writes this very interesting and thoughtful article about how in Canada and probably also anywhere around the world, the COVID-19 crisis is leading us to rethink what a judicial system means. Our traditional notion is that people physically walk into a courtroom and there are physical presentations made to a judge. And it turns out that for many disputes, even in normal times, that's problematic. It's difficult for people to get down to the courtroom. And so one of the things that the province of British Columbia has been doing in one of its court systems is allowing for remote proceedings. And that's increasingly what we're seeing needs to be thought through and considered in the context of this pandemic, especially when many of our judges, by the way, are themselves at higher risk, probably just because of their age. And we see the Supreme Court of the United States right now having its proceedings conducted by telephone. These are really disruptive times, and they're disruptive to our ordinary ways of carrying out vital government functions, from the judicial system to our educational system to making sure that people who are unemployed get compensated. There's a wonderful student-written piece by Ali Gottlieb about the challenges that the state of Florida has gone through in trying to make sure that unemployed workers get their unemployment insurance benefits. The websites for these state unemployment agencies haven't been able to handle the capacity for the tens of millions of workers who have been laid off due to the pandemic. So the reach of this crisis is really broad, and the coverage within this particular series in the regulatory review is also quite broad and illuminating.
How do you think that the pandemic influence is going to affect regulation into the future?
We do see this pandemic laying bare, I think, a fundamental truth about regulation and law in general, that society's moving pretty quickly, even in normal times. And laws and regulations tend to be much more static. And I think one lesson to take from this experience, at least I hope we might learn from it, is that regulatory systems also need to be responsive. It's not just a matter of putting words on paper or rules down in the law books and thinking that, oh, the task of regulating is done. But regulating is actually an ongoing activity. It requires ongoing vigilance. And this is true certainly in the face of a fast-moving public health crisis, but it's also true in a world of fast-moving technological innovation, of changing innovations in business forms and investment strategies. We need to have a public regulatory system that's adequately resourced and sufficiently staffed with individuals who can keep tabs on the changing world and be responsive to it and be adjusting rules, not letting them necessarily sit on the books forever just because, at once they were thought needed, but engaging in ongoing retrospective review of regulations and calibrating the regulatory responses to the real challenges that people face today. It's not easy, and it does require certainly a commitment and resources to staff regulatory agencies to make them smarter, more nimble, more agile. But it really is what I think we've seen for many, many years, even preceding this current pandemic. And the pandemic, I think, lays bare the need for government that's responsive, well-resourced, smart, capable, and not stuck in its ways.
Yeah, I agree with that. To add on to it, I think that's certainly one lesson that I've learned from covering the COVID-19 pandemic through a healthcare lens. I think what we're seeing right now with the use of telehealth and some of the regulations around telehealth really highlights how regulation needs to continuously change and be monitored, especially in times of a crisis like this. So for example, I wrote a piece about how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting the opioid epidemic. And I talked specifically about the Drug Enforcement Administration's decision to ease some of its restrictions on prescribing controlled substances for individuals who are in opioid treatment programs. And the decision was made ultimately to help individuals continue their treatment and, in this time of social distancing and quarantining. And I think that's one example of how agencies need to be held accountable to make decisions to, tough decisions. The controlled substances are highly regulated, and rightly so, because they are dangerous. But sometimes those decisions need to be made and regulations need to be updated in order to weigh a trade-off and to help individuals during this time.
I'm glad you mentioned that piece, Larissa. I think it's a brilliant piece, very creative, and precisely indicative of the kind of caliber of students we have here at Penn Law and the way that they do think outside the box. Yes, we are facing right now a public health crisis of huge proportions with the pandemic. But, you know, for the last decade or so, we've been dealing with another huge public health crisis around the opioid epidemic. And to bring those two together in such a fresh, informative way is just in emblematic of, I think, the kind of quality and distinctive coverage of regulatory issues that are provided through the regulatory review, and indicative also, I think, of the kind of learning opportunities that it affords our students like Larissa, who are involved in and leading the publication.
Thank you for carrying me through this conversation today. And that's all I got, really. So thank you very much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you so much.